Hello, my name is Racheli Lofglas. Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we will be studying Sefer Nehemiah, Perek Vav, the 6th chapter. Yesterday we learned that not only did Nehemiah stand up for the poor when he was alerted to issues of social justice, but he actually went so far as to cancel debts that were owed to him and that he and his staff never even accepted public funds to pay their own wages. Today, we're going to revert to an earlier topic of enemies trying to halt the construction of the walls. Let's begin. Pasuk Aleph. Vayihi kasher nishma l'Sanballat v'tovio l'geshem ha'raviyu l'yeter ha'oyveinu. And when our enemies, the same hooligans as before, heard, ki baniti et ha'choma, that I built the wall, v'lo notar ba'paret, and that there is no breaches left, gam ad ha'etahi, even now, dlatot lohem adati b'sharim, even though just the doors are not yet complete. So the question first is, what did they hear? So the Mishnah actually teaches that perhaps these hooligans heard that now people were carrying in the city on Shabbos, which means that there aren't any gaps in the walls and they're well protected. Pasuk bet. Vayishlach Sanballat v'geshem elai leimor lecha v'nivada yachdav b'kfirim b'vikat ono v'hem achoshim l'asot li ra'a. So these adversaries hear that the wall had been completed and that there were no more breaches through which they could invade Yerushalayim. And from then on now ensues 5 different attempts of false charges on their behalf to really bring Nehemiah down. And Nehemiah is going to understand that their invitation to meet him here is merely a trap to ambush him. They asked in Pasuk bet that they should meet somewhere, you know, in private, in an area in the Kfirim called Bikat Oma, and he somehow has an understanding that really this is just a ruse. So one of the questions we can ask is, where is Tovia in the list here? So we only see the other 2 men who are looking to conspire, Sanballat and Geshem, but we don't see Tovia, who we had seen earlier. He's disappeared from the story. So Rabbi Dov Zakheim posits that Tovia did not actually join in this invitation to Nehemiah. Potentially, he actually had shrunk from the idea of murdering a fellow Jew, but also he might have been assigned to attack the city while Nehemiah is going to be out at Kfirim. So they can't invite Nehemiah to this meeting in the forest if, you know, to meet someone who they know won't be there. So he anyway never would have met Nehemiah had he been in the city when Nehemiah leaves. And if that plan would succeed, the leaderless Jews would then really be expected to panic and surrender without a fight. So this is all part of their plan. Either way, how does Nehemiah know that this is an ambush? We see him respond now to their attack as though he is personally responsible for all the construction. Pasuk Gimel and Dalet tell us, Ve'eshlecha aleihem malachim leimor, he sent that messengers, Melacha gdola ani oseh, I have a lot of work to do, he tells them, V'lo chared, that I can't meet you. Lama tishbara melacha kasher arpeh v'iradati aleichem, why should the work cease just for me to come down to you? It's just not worthwhile. Ve'eshlechu elai kadavar hazeh arba pamim v'ashivotam kadavar hazeh, 4 more times, after Nehemiah politely retorts with an invite decline, explaining he's too busy to take time off, they continue this charade 4 more times, and each time he declines. Pasuk Hey, Vayishlach Elai Sanballat Kadavar Zeh Pam Chamishit Et Naro. And then the 5th time, Sanballat sends a letter with his messenger, V'igeret Ptucha Biyado, and he is holding the letter. This time is an unsealed letter. So why the emphasis on an open letter? Truthfully, it's an invitation publicly for the people to read, and the charge is really against Nehemiah personally. It's also really an insult that a diplomatic letter is open and you don't bother to seal it. It's just a lack of respect. And what does it say in this letter? Pasuk Vav, Katub Vav Agoyim Nishma V'Gash Momer. It states in it that people are talking and even Geshem is saying, Atav HaYudim Choshvim Limrod, you Nehemiah and your fellow Jews are conspiring to rebel against Persia, Alkena Tabone Achoma, and therefore you are building these walls, Vata Hovela Hem Lamelach Kadverim Hela, and you are planning to be a king over these people. Vigam Nevi'im Hem Adatalikro Alecha Bisham, and you're even putting up Nevi'im all over, prophets all over the city of Yerushalayim, Lemor Melech Behuda, to scream out the mantra, Melech Behuda, king is in Judah. Vata Yishamala Melech Kadverim Hela, now the king of Persia is going to hear about these things. Vata Lechav Ni Vata Yachav. Come on, Nehemiah, let's go discuss this before the king finds out. So this 5th time, Sanballat sent a letter claiming the Jews are really planning a coup against Persia, and they let Nehemiah know that they know he's looking to function as king, and that he's established prophets in Yerushalayim to coronate him, so to speak. So let's just plan together. Let's meet together, because it's really not going to be good for the king of Persia to hear what you're doing. And the question really is, what are these guys doing? Potentially, they're even just trying to call up Nehemiah's bluff and not even showing up to basically meet them. Pasuk Chet, how does Nehemiah respond? He sends them a message saying, Lo niyek ad vermeila. Liar! This is not true, he says to them. Asher ata omer. Ki milibcha ata bodam. You're making all this stuff up. Ki kulam miyarim otanu lemor. Everybody is fearing the Jewish people right now. Yerpu yodem elacha. They can't believe that we haven't been exhausted from all this work. Velo teaseh. And it's not going to happen. Ata chazak et yadi. And you now have this, and now you are strengthening my resolve. So Nehemiah doesn't take the bait in the story here. He doesn't understand why Sanballat thinks he would accept his advice. And Nehemiah, as somebody who never falls for a ruse, really just responds denying their rumors. He rejects all offers of taking counsel together, and he lets Sanballat know that whatever taunts he thinks he's going to throw Nehemiah's way really are just going to strengthen Nehemiah's resolve to continue building and not join some clandestine meeting. Obviously, he recognizes the blackmail here, and he calls Sanballat a liar, and it succeeds. So the question is, there's going to be, and we've seen already, some mention of Nevi'im in this parak, and it's going to continue throughout the parak. And if we take a step back for a second and think about it, this is really the era. Shivat Zion is really an era that's really post-prophecy, or at least where it's waning. But we do see that false prophecy still exists. People believed in the idea of established prophets, and they actually thought maybe that's Nehemiah, or what Nehemiah's do, they thought that that is Sanballat. And Rashi does not translate it as such, but he thinks that Nevi'im in this parak is referring to just fluent speakers or people that can carry messages. That appears in Daniel and that appears in other Sfarim in Tanakh. And there's an allegation here against Nehemiah that he has taken orders and actually set them up to think he's going to be the new king and to go around the community speaking about it. Malbim actually makes reference to Shemaiah, this particular Navi, so to speak, identified as a Navi Sheker, who is hired to really rally the people to get behind Nehemiah. And though Nevuah might be dead, prophecy is not something that's unfamiliar to this generation. And like I said, false prophets really run rampant, at least in very big Persian cities. So this idea of hiring a false prophet is not so crazy in this era. Even Malachi, the last Navi we ever had, is either a contemporary with the story or the generation just beforehand. So I think something that we should ask is this really true, this rumor? Are there people running around town, so to speak, claiming that Nehemiah is going to be king? And I think the answer is, it makes sense. It's really a potential that we should think about. You know, the Jewish people returned after the 70-year prophecy from Yirmiyahu about the Babylonian exile. It's over. They're building a wall around Jerusalem. They have a Beit HaMikdash. They're succeeding in gaining all their materials from Persia. Absolutely, people believe monarchy is the next step. They've restored everything else. And the truth is, if we think about the Bar Kokhba story from 500 years after this, this is a much easier fit. This rumor, so to speak, could be treason. So we have to wonder whether or not Nehemiah himself either thinks or feels about these rumors and what his potential aspirations might be. Or is he really just happy to return to being the cupbearer of Artaxerxes? And maybe these Tzarei Yehuda, these taunters, are only simply smelling out the pulse of the people and even capitalizing on it. Okay, so what does Nehemiah do? V'ani bati beit Shemaiah, like I said, he comes to the house of Shemaiah, ben Delaya, ben Mehatbael, v'hu Atzor. He comes to the house of Shemaiah, this Navi, and he happens to be bound at this time, which we'll talk about in a second. Vayomer, and what does Shemaiah say to Nehemiah? Niva'ed el beit Elokim, let's gather together or conference in the Beis HaMikdash, el tocha heichal, on the inner sanctum of the sanctuary. V'nisgirat al tocha heichal, will close the doors behind us at the sanctuary. Ki ba'im l'arkacha, to protect you. People are coming to kill you. V'layla ba'im l'arkacha, they're coming tonight. So Nehemiah comes to Shemaiah, who's confined. It seems to have some kind of a lineage. And Shemaiah recommends that they barricade themselves inside the Mikdash in order to protect Nehemiah from the assassination plot that seems to be, you know, impending or imminent for that evening. So what is actually going on here? Why is Nehemiah going to Shemaiah, the house of the Navi? This seems to be total self-incrimination, especially if they're claiming, the hooligans, that Nehemiah is getting Nevi'im around him to build him up as king. So I think we have to try to analyze this from a couple different levels. Number one, how could a Navi tell someone to do something that's prohibited? Is this a situation of Hara'at Shah, that it's an emergency situation and there's special dispensation? So what's the prohibition here? Nehemiah, just a regular Jew from, you know, not a Kohen or a Levi, doesn't have a right to go into the inner sanctum of the Beit HaMikdash. So how could a Navi tell him to do that in order to protect himself? Potentially, what Nehemiah is trying to do is to silence Shemaiah. What Malbim says, is that when Nehemiah heard people talking about him, thinking that he wants to be king, Nehemiah goes to Shemaiah almost to like verify, like, hey, is this true? Are people really talking like this? Yet Shemaiah is ill, at least according to the Malbim, and he cannot be summoned by the governor of Nehemiah right now because he is somehow, you know, bound. So it's interesting that the usage for this word atzur is that he's bound almost like in quarantine. And you see this this word atzur in several other places in Tanakh. You see it about Doeg HaAdomi back in Shmuel Aleph, that he is lingering before God, which seems voluntary, kind of bound or sticking around. Yirmiyahu also was atzur, which meant in the book of Yirmiyahu, meant that he was imprisoned or he was in hiding and that it was involuntary on his part. So what's going on here with Shemaiah? Dot Mikra tells us that he's actually just alone at home and it's in a self-imposed quarantine. Mama makes it as though he's ill and therefore he's detained, so to speak. I guess we understand that nowadays, very Corona-esque, this quarantine. But there seems to be a purposeful ambiguity. Ibn Ezra proposes that Shemaiah locked himself up for ascetic religious reasons, almost like a monk. Yet Ralbag takes Ibn Ezra's general direction and he adds a twist. He suggests that Shemaiah, you know, locked himself up ascetically, yes, in order, because he was seeking out, you know, this idea of achieving prophecy. So Shemaiah's religious intentions really highlight his hypocrisy in trying to compromise Nehemiah in exchange for money. It underscores the real complexity of any relationship and alliance that Nehemiah is trying to navigate by kind of trapping him into the Beit HaMikdash to do something that doesn't look good in front of the eyes of the Jews. So why tell Nehemiah to hide inside the temple? You know, on a literal level, we can understand it because the doors of the Mikdash are like a fortress. But if you remember back to the beginning of this parak, we said that the walls of the city are finished, except the doors are not yet done. And Rashi states, basically, we just don't have enough information to figure out if the plot is what Nehemiah thinks. So what happens? Pasuk Yud Aleph, Va'omra ha'ish kamoni yivrach. Nehemiah responds to Shemaiah, a man like me is going to run away? Umi kamoni asher yavo el heichal v'chai. I would never survive if I went into the heichal. Lo avo, no chance, I'm not coming. Va'akira v'hinei lo elokim shlacho. And I understood, says Nehemiah, this is not a man that God sent. Ki ha'nevuah diber elai. Even though he speaks to me as if he's a Navi, the Tovia v'Sanbalat Tzcharo, but really he's just being hired by Tovia and Sanbalat. L'man Tzachoru L'mani Ra V'Esekin, they're just hiring him to scare me. V'chatati v'haya lahem l'shem ra. And I sinned, and they're becoming, you know, a bad name. L'mani Chifuni, they're just trying to insult me. So Nehemiah really believes that this so-called quote-unquote prophet is colluding with the enemy behind Nehemiah's back. He actually demurs here, explaining that it's not his style to flee. And moreover, he says, if he enters the Beit HaMikdash, he's going to die anyway, presumably for violating a prohibition of entry as a non-Kohen. So Nehemiah actually comes to this realization that Shemaiah is in fact lying, and he had been hired by Tovia and Sanballat to tempt Nehemiah into sin, which would obviously sully his name for his future legacy. Ibn Ezra, on the other hand, does not think that this is at all about a sin of entering the Beit HaMikdash, because if he has to enter into, you know, for self-defense, so to speak, then it's not a problem. But he sees this as a political read. Ibn Ezra says that Nehemiah fears that he would get a bad rap to going into the Beit HaMikdash and closing the doors on himself. He looks like a coward. Here, he's the guy that's building the walls to build them up and to protect them and secure them. And if he's going to be hiding and cowering, then they lose their trust in who Nehemiah is, because it sounds like he's only pretending to feel confident. So the hooligan's concern for tarnishing Nehemiah's reputation really has a very striking modern ring to it. They're trying to embroil him in some kind of scandal, and Nehemiah will have no part of it. So what does he do to protect himself? He does what he always does. He davens. Pasuk Yudalid, Zachar Elokai leTovia leSanballat, Hashem, please remember Tovia and Sanballat kima'asav ela, what they did, v'gam leNoadiah haNeviyah, and also Noadiah the prophetess, uleYeter haNeviyim, and all the other prophets, Asher hayu mi'arim tim, that are trying to scare me and intimidate me. I need you to remember them, Hashem. And, you know, basically he's asking Hashem to punish them, you know, and instead he proceeds with his sacred work. So who is this Noadiah the prophetess? And why does Nehemiah not include Shemaiah at all? So interestingly, I saw that the Ibn Ezra says that Noadiah the prophetess is actually not a female prophet, but it is Shemaiah himself. And that the name was changed because when he says in Pasuk Yud, Ni Va'ed, let's meet, let's have a conference, from the word Va'ad. So it's a play on words and giving the name Noadiah. But her identity is somehow ambiguous. The Mefarshim don't really discuss it. Okay, now on multiple occasions here in Perek Vav, we actually have been seeing, like I said earlier, the term nevuah, prophecy, is being used really ambiguously. So what are we supposed to make of all these usages of this phrase in the Perek? It's quite confusing. We have to remember that at this point in the study of Shivat Zion, of the return to Zion, the answer is really evident. Prophecy is on the wane. And in this very transitional moment, Nehemiah is invoking the term Navi, quote unquote, in both very ambiguous and shifting ways. Yes, prophecy still exists, but it casts a much shorter shadow than it had before, and this is something that they have to get used to. Pasuk Tet Vav, despite all these additional provocations, Tishlam, Hachoma, the wall is completed on the 25th day of Elul, which is a week before Rosh Hashanah, which altogether is 52 days. So that's what it took, 52 days to build this whole wall. Ibn Ezra totally disagrees and says that it took much longer. He says it's only 52 days since the first letter attempt at claiming Nehemiah as a mastermind of a coup, and to cease their construction, that was sent at the beginning of Perek Vav, that according to Ibn Ezra, that's the 52-day mark, but all the other Mepharshim really disagree and say it was 52 days altogether. And then we get this is a victory speech despite the taunters. Otherwise, why tell me mid-sentence about, that the wall is finished? What would be the Smichos Parshios? What would be the connection here, now talking about the wall? And then right after this announcement that the wall is completed, we get a letter-writing campaign. Tetvav, Pasuk Tetvav to Yutet, the 15th Pasuk till the end of the parak, really just tells us about a letter, a back and forth. Vayi kasher shamu kol oyveinu, vayiru kol hagoyim asher svivoteinu, vayiplu ba'od beineihem, vayedu ki me'et elokeinu ne'asta hamelacha hazot. As soon as the enemies heard that we are finishing the wall, they were terrified. And they were devastated and forlorn because they realized that the only reason why we managed to complete our construction is because of God and that He allowed us to do it. And then letters go back and forth between the hooligans and the Jewish people. A lot of people are willing to send him letters because he is a mechutan. His children are married into the family of Shechaniah. V'yochanan b'no lakachat bat mishulam ben rechia. So the families are somehow completely mixed. Gam tovotav hayu omrim lefanai. And they used to speak to me good things about him. They would tell me wonderful things about him. Udvarai hayu motzim lo igrot shalach tovia lirani. And they would speak to him of good things about me. And I think all this was really just to scare me, says Nehemiah. So to summarize the parak, the enemies are finally conceding that they're not blocking our project. God is with the Jewish people. And even so, the noblemen of Judea, though, continue to maintain this correspondence with Tovia, constantly informing him as to Nehemiah's whereabouts and his intentions, which is strange that they feel like they have to do this now that they are fully protected with this wall. Most of the Jewish people had sworn loyalty to Tovia, since he's the son-in-law of Shechaniah, who's the son of Arak, a very, very prominent Jewish leader. And we saw him also in the end of Perek of Sefer Ezra. But I think Nehemiah believes that Tovia is infiltrating this community, and therefore they're still vulnerable, which is why the building of the walls is really insufficient. Though they have culminated their project, Nehemiah still feels that the people are vulnerable. And Malbim reads this letter writing campaign and the vulnerability that Nehemiah feels as a lead into the next parak, which is where we're going to learn tomorrow in Parak Zion that Nehemiah knows they need to guard the city and have a constant shifting of the guards, because it's not enough to just have a wall, because there are Jews who seem to want to cause harm even from the inside. So these plots have become really personal to Nehemiah, and they persist after the completion of the wall. Thank you for studying together. Li'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.